we didn't.
Well, that's a good title for the occasion.
If we couldn't take up the odds and ends on this agenda and bring up finance tomorrow, what do people think?
Aren't there a lot of people here for finance?
Ron, what's your opinion of that? Where's Carl?
Right there. Unification or finance?
Well, we have to take unification. What is your opinion on that? Did you hear what I said?
Yes, I did, and it's immaterial to me when the board takes up the matter. It's their pleasure, I think.
Their what?
Their pleasure.
It's your pleasure.
All right. Well, if that doesn't matter to you, then let's do that.
That's a stretch of the term, but it's all right.
All right, item two is off the agenda. Item three is unification. That's tomorrow, isn't it, Ron?
Yeah.
1:30, it has to be, doesn't it?
Can I ask about item two?
Off the agenda.
You mean continued, or
are
we not
going to
discuss it, or what?
Can
we discuss it, or?
Well, the committee has to decide the matter of textbook procedures on the mathematics adoption. And so does the board. And in view of the fact that we have a specific problem, that is to say, the mathematics adoption, it's a very complicated one. When is that going to be coming up?
January.
Was that you discussed it in committee, didn't you?
Oh, yes.
It's my feeling that we ought to skip two because it's general and not specific.
It doesn't mean the issue is dropped. It just means that
there's some reason for dropping it all together or what. I mean, I've prepared myself by reading some very excellent material that's been submitted to us, and now we're not, like doing your homework and then we're done.
Everybody calls
the class.
Well, it'll, doubtless, you've been on the board long enough to know that any homework you do on this subject will be useful to you later on. Four is school district.
Five and six we could probably handle, couldn't we?
Five and six, do you want to take now, Ron?
Item number five, Mr. Braden, is a proposal from Glenn County Committee on School District Organization to extend the deadline date on master plan presentation to September 15th, 1964. The board on previous occasions has almost summarily extended these deadline dates upon the request of the county.
So moved.
Second. All right, all those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Carried.
Item number six, Mr. Braden, members of the board, is a request from the Santa Cruz County Committee to extend the master plan date to September 15th, 1964. The board will remember that at a previous meeting, the Santa Cruz County Committee requested and received an extension of 90 days. They have not been able during the 90-day period to bring to conclusion the last study in their county. They are asking for the extension of the deadline date again until September 15th, 1964.
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried.
Item eight, should I take that one?
You want seven or nine?
About seven, Ron.
Oh, excuse me.
Failure of the board to approve the recommendation of the YOLO committee.
I've read it.
This is a letter taken upon the action of the board not approving a recommendation of a county committee. It's required to be sent to the county committee as a basis for their action in returning recommendations to the board on the same territory.
I move its approval.
Second.
Seconded by Bishop Kennedy. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried.
Dick Clouds, number eight.
Dick, are you here? Dick Clouds?
He must have stepped off.
All right.
Is this an action item?
You got any more, Ron, when you're on your feet?
Is item
This is just informational. I can take it up if you want to hear it.
This is an item, Mr. Braden, that was not in the board's agenda. It was submitted by the San Joaquin County on School District Organization. Came to the department only on Monday of this week. The committee and the county council of San Joaquin County has requested the board to take action upon it at this meeting so that the action taken may be effective or may be followed by local action that has to be completed prior to February 1st of this year. Action in the January meeting will be too late for the local action to be completed and the districts formed so that they will be effective July 1, 1964. If action by the board is not taken at this time, it will likely delay the formation of these districts by local action until a year later, July 1st, 1965.
What is your recommendation?
I recommend that the board open its agenda for the matter, hear it, and act upon it.
Do we need a motion to accept it on the agenda? I don't think so.
Is there a discussion or anything about it? I mean, are there presentations, pro and con, all that sort of thing?
There are. This is an automatic action that the board may take. It involves the inclusion of elementary districts not in a high school district. It involves elementary districts not of a part of a high school district in a high school district.
Is there any opposition to it?
If there is any opposition to it, the opposition should have come before the county committee. If the board approves these actions, then the elementary district is automatically included in the high school district. And every other one of these actions presented to the board in the years past, the board has approved the action taken by the county committee.
And you so suggest?
Yes.
All right.
I so move.
Second. Moved and seconded that we approve this proposal of the county committee.
All right, there are...
All those in... What?
Excuse me, there are four districts involved. It will require the adoption of four resolutions. The first one is with respect to the annexation of the Holt Union School District in San Joaquin County to the Tracy Joint Union High School District.
All right, that's moved and seconded. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Carried.
Second one is the annexation of the Ringe School District of San Joaquin County to Tracy Joint Union High School District.
Move it. Second. By Bishop Kennedy, second by Mr. Commons. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried.
Third one is the annexation of the Grant School District of San Joaquin County to the Linden Union High School of that county.
So moved.
Moved and seconded. Dr. Collins, all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried.
And the fourth one is the annexation of the Venice School District to the Lodi Union High School District.
Move it.
Second. Moved and seconded by Dr. Collins. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried.
All right. I'd like to note to Dr. Cox that I've given four very weak eyes and that I'm counting on him.
Well,
doing the right thing, because I haven't had a chance to look at this.
He's told us that this is a technical matter, and
I think the board would be interested to know that with this action, there remains in the state of California only three elementary districts that are not now a part of the high school district.
Well, you won't have to do it again.
The action taken by the 63 legislature made your action mandatory with all elementary districts except those that had to be attached to a unified district. The other three are of that type.
So that is the end of it?
There are three, that's the end of it under the present law.
Yeah, so Mr. Dabba will never have to face this weak vote again. All right. Max says he can give us 8 and 9, unless, Ron, have you still got anything more that you...
I have one other item, if you want to take it now, and it's item 13. Item 13 concerns junior college non-resident fees or out-of-state fees for junior college purposes. There are attached two resolutions. The resolutions are required by Senate Bill 647 of the 63 session, which provided that the State Board of Education shall not later than January 1st of each year establish a uniform fee for those students attending junior college who qualify as non-resident students. The provision further provides that foreign students, military personnel, or dependents of military personnel may be subject to such a fee at the discretion of the governing board of the local district, and that each district report annually to the Department of Education the number of non-resident students enrolled and the amount of money received in each of the following categories: foreign students, military personnel and dependents of military personnel, other non-resident students. The first resolution sets the amount of the fee. You will see that the actual resolution before you is in blank form. And into those blanks, the following figures should be written. In the fourth from the bottom line, following manual is $, write $306.96. Now, I'm amused at the 96 cents, but the provisions of law require that we compute this. And this is the computation. In the last blank on the last page, the per unit fee is $10.23.
Do these have to be changed every year? Or?
Yes, these have to be changed every year before January of each year on the basis of the computation made of costs in the junior colleges during the second preceding year.
Is this one of these formulas that you interpret, Dr. Cox?
This is one of the formulas that I administer under the statute.
Who gets this money, the individual college?
The charge is made, is mandatory. It's mandatory that the local district charge. It is, the money stays in the treasury of the local district. It may be expended for any junior college purpose.
What is the extent of non-resident students in junior colleges now? It used to be pretty good when the football traffic was high, but they ended that.
I'm not prepared to give you statistics on it, and I don't think we can give you any good statistics on it until we have a registration of students under this law, because we have no uniform definition of out-of-state student or non-resident student at the present time. Estimates have been made, and perhaps some junior college person here could mention an estimate.
We have had a dry run in Los Angeles, and it amounts to about 4% of the total student body.
Are out of state.
What is the percent on foreign students? This is of great interest to me. Because I think we all recognize there's some implications in the expansion of this program, particularly on the national level. And I know particularly from India that there are quite a few young people coming here, and while $306.96 may not seem much here, that's a lot of rupees in India.
How about Atlantic City?
Yeah, that's true. And they have a lot. They have a great difficulty getting any money out of that country, and I imagine this is true in a lot of others.
The statute does provide, Mr. Scott, that the local district may exempt foreign students from the payment of tuition.
Do they?
I can't answer that question because the statute will not be in effect until 1964-65.
Paul, do we have any indications as to how many foreign students are enrolled in junior colleges? Less than 2%.
I move the adoption of the proposed resolution.
Second. Moved and seconded we adopt the proposed resolution. 300 and whatever it is, 99 cents. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried.
There is the second resolution in connection with this item, which defines certain terms in the statute, and which provides for the use of forms in determining residency, and provides for the forms to report information and enrollments of these non-resident pupils to the State Department of Education, and defines what per unit tuition fee means. If there are no questions about these, I would recommend the adoption of these regulations.
I assume that the development of, did you say that these definitions came from the legislature, or are these?
No. These are terms used in the statute, which we felt needed definition in order to uniformly administer the statute throughout the state.
Have they been reviewed by the junior college people themselves?
They were circulated to all junior colleges throughout the state, and criticisms, suggestions were solicited, and some were received.
You accept them?
There were no changes in the original draft upon the receipt of suggestions by the junior college people, the individual junior college presidents. One of the suggestions was to make a distinction between a foreign student here on a study grant as compared to other foreign students. We didn't believe that the statute made that necessary.
Does there was junior college Association representative here find any fault with this?
No, sir. We have studied this whole thing. There was one question in the area of the military, and that was the question of the 75 units lawn, and we weren't sure where you got that figure and how you came about.
This was the next one I was to mention. On page 2, in defining a dependent of a military personnel,
see the usefulness of this, of having this junior college people present, because he could have told us that he wanted a different, he didn't like your definition of what an adult was many years ago.
It wasn't my definition, Mr. Braden. It became the definition of the board, or I mean, of the legislature.
All right, anyway, go ahead.
In C2, a military dependent is defined as a spouse of a person who is who is of the military personnel, and a person who has not completed 75 semester units of college work. The question arose as to where would this dependent of a spouse stop being a dependent at a certain age of, say, 21, when he reaches majority, or at some other point in his career. We decided against a 21-year age because many of these 21-year-olds and olders, and those older than 21, are in attendance upon junior college. We used a 75 semester as the basis of the fact that the person had already completed the first 2 years, at least, of college training. If there is, and this does not mean that a dependent of a military spouse who has completed 75 semester hours of work cannot enroll in a junior college. It only means that if he does enroll in a junior college, he is subject to the tuition payment if he is a non-resident.
Mm-hmm. As he's already completed 2 years of college work.
Yes.
That seems fair enough. Does that seem fair to you, junior college representative? Does it? Well, all right. Is there a motion?
I move.
It moved. Is it second?
Second.
Seconded by Bishop Kennedy. Moved by Mr. Dabman. We approve this resolution. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ron. Well, Dr. Rafferty, do you want to do 8 and 9 then?
Well, I think we can do it very quickly. Clear your decks for tomorrow. The paper-bound textbook study is one which the department, I think, has been told of previously. Without bothering to read this thing over, just to summarize it, we're conducting a study of the feasibility of increasing the use, and we're trying to find out how they're going to last in actual classroom usage. There are, of course, a lot of books, paperback books, that are now being used in some sort of supplementary capacity. These, however, are going to be regular books used in a classroom situation. It's being carried on in Los Angeles and Sacramento. We have no final determinations to offer you. We wanted you to be informed as to what was going on. There are other experiments being conducted throughout the country in this. The pages under item 8 indicate how the experiment is being conducted. If you have any comments or questions, I'd be glad to make a note of them, relay them to Dr. Clowes, whose office is conducting this study in conjunction with the various school districts involved. There's a possibility that we might be able to work some considerable savings in textbooks if this turns out favorable.
I have a couple of questions about it. Firstly, we have arithmetic books down here. Considering the fact that these are may not be used for any considerable length of time, does this make very much sense?
Dr. Cox, all these arithmetic books under this paperback study, do you know which ones those were? We had two arithmetic books listed as being studied. They're being issued in paperback form out of the 6 textbooks selected. I do not have the particular information here.
It's grade 5 and grade 7.
It's the current arithmetic series that is now being used for grades, whatever is listed there.
And how long a study is this going to be?
It looks like it might be only a one-year study if the desires of the board are achieved.
This is
not, it'll be only a two-year study.
That's right.
And will this give us any information that is of value?
Yes, we also have in this study some social studies books in paperback that we habitually now print for last year's use in paperback that are going to be used only 1 year.
Oh, I see.
We are testing to see if these books manufactured for 1 year in paperback may be extended for 2 years use as a paperback book.
And then secondly, the question of whether this might be feasible for supplementary text where it might not be feasible for a basic text.
I think that the results of this will give us some indications in this area.
This
we're interested in this
be.
As well.
There
this
are supplementary books in the list of those being tested, and the degree of use they get and their longevity under the test will make it possible to determine if it will be economical to provide these in paperback.
Oh, I didn't see any supplementary listed, so I didn't confuse
that. All right, well, no action is required.
No, it's an information item.
All right.
Item 9, the State Board recently suggested they might like to know a little more about some of the specific problems coming before the Committee of Credentials. And this particular informational item gives you a couple of rather knotty problems, which the committee has been faced with recently. This is informational, although they would welcome any suggestions from you in regard to these. They are at present really causing some head scratching on the committee, and they are described for you briefly here. We thought that this might serve a double useful purpose. First of all, to show you what occasionally from time to time what some of these problems are, and secondly, to get any reactions from you that we might pass on to the committee for their edification and assistance.
Well, I've looked over these two problems. I'd like to express my own viewpoint on the first one at any rate. The second one is another matter. Seems to me, Dr. Rafferty, that we who are engaged in, for the most part, in business don't really have much experience, and I say this without any humor in it, with employees' problems in extramarital relations. We don't because it doesn't matter. It's not a matter of concern in an insurance organization or a newspaper. It just doesn't come across the average man's desk. Now, a professional educator, it's a different type of fellow. It does matter to him.
Right.
And I, for one, I just wouldn't venture an opinion on this without knowing seriously what the professional educator says. For example, you or any other superintendent, presumably, anybody who's had much experience, have faced this problem in your school. You've probably counseled with people. You've probably had your situations that you had to cope with. And I would rather wait until you, with either now or at some other time, would give us the benefit of your advice as to what this means to a professional educator.
Actually, the thing is split. The committee is split. It's composed of professional educators, and there's a definite divergence of opinion on this. You see, it's a knotty question. It is not the type of misbehavior which customarily comes under the criminal courts or the criminal law. It is a technical felony, but very few people are ever convicted on the grounds of simple adultery. And yet the facts in the case are apparently well known. The committee is divided on this, or was divided. I think they finally have reached an opinion, or perhaps put it over for a little while to consider it. But we thought that you might be interested in seeing this, because when the final result comes to you, if it does, there will be a very definite split and difference of opinion on the part of the committee in this sort of thing. I think there will be one on the part of number two. Both of these are cases which are up in the air and which are hard to pin down, much harder than some that we normally bring to you. We're not bringing these with any names or with any great detail of circumstance, but simply to show you the moral issue involved in them.
Well, I agree with Mr. Braden that case two presents an entirely different problem, and I think we might discuss that problem separately.
Well, we would be interested in any discussion you might wish to make on either one of these.
Well, on number one, it seems to me that I don't ever recall a case coming before the board involving this type of fact situation. And I suppose there's some suggestion that the board ought to have a policy on this matter. And I think I agree with the chairman that before we do so, I would want to know what you felt, Dr. Rafferty, as a professional educator and as our executive officer. You've had experience with the teachers over the years, and we have not. Is it your opinion, based upon your experience, that this kind of conduct should be the basis of revocation of a credential?
I'll do this. We'll bring this before you when it comes, if the committee decides that it should come before the board, in other words, to revoke or to recommend revocation. And I will have my own opinion in writing for you at that time for you to consider. I'm not sure that it will come to that.
Well, I think that would be
quite
useful.
Frankly, now, I don't know. I'm puzzled about this.
I would guess that a statement from the professionals on the problem of extramarital relations would be the best guide we could have.
Okay.
Number two, Bill, do you have any comments?
I think two is a very interesting question. It appears that in early 1961, The board adopted some sort of a policy statement which seems to tie the hands of the our credentials committee. And I gather it is the view of the credentials committee. And in the facts of this case, it appears that there has been rehabilitation,
right,
of an applicant or a teacher, an applicant, who is now age 34 and who committed an offense involving violence or use of a deadly weapon 15 years ago at the age of 20. And it is a view of the credentials committee, apparently, that he's been fully rehabilitated. And at least the credentials committee ought to be in a position of exercising some discretion on whether to grant his credential. And as long as this policy statement is in effect, I don't really see that they can do anything but deny the application. And I think this is properly brought before the board for review. I have a great deal of difficulty with any policy statement that is so restrictive and allows no discretion whatsoever in the credentials committee to make a finding of rehabilitation. I think that we ought not to tie their hands this way.
The applicant does have right to appeal to you on this.
You know, he can appeal to us despite the policy.
Yes, he can appeal to you because your provision, your passed in 61, said with the understanding that any such applicant dissatisfied with the commission's action might appeal to the board as provided by law. What this prevents, as Bill has pointed out, is the curriculum commission using any discretion, mm-hmm, or the credential commission using any discretion.
Well, now, the appeal to us, would that be to a hearing procedure?
Yes.
And
you would obtain a hearing under the Administrative Procedure Act.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Kennedy.
I want to ask a question, and it would affect both of these. Now, in case of either one of these persons, if they already had a credential and an accusation was made, they'd have a hearing, wouldn't they?
Well, if they request it.
Yeah, if they're accused, before you revoke a credential,
oh,
if
yeah,
they already had it.
Oh, yeah.
Well, can you do anything less than that? If somebody's coming up for the first time, then to give them a hearing on a thing of this kind, if somebody makes an accusation?
Well, they would get a hearing on this, Bishop, but the problem is that the curriculum commission would automatically have to deny them their credential. They would have to move for revocation.
In the case of number two.
In the case of number two.
Because of our policy.
Because of your presently stated policy, which governs the commission, you see.
We've got to change our policy.
Well, this is
a question. No, the credentials committee, but for this policy, would have the discretion to say, all right, we think the man's been rehabilitated and he should get the credential, and then he wouldn't have to go through the procedure of a
yeah,
hearing and then come all the way up to us. I suppose what we should do is wait for this one to come to us, and that would provide a specific occasion for reviewing the policy. But at that time, I would hope that we would have the recommendation of the credentials committee on the facts of this particular case.
Bill, what happened to that new procedure that Blue Ribbon Committee worked on?
It's on the agenda for
it's
this
on the
meeting.
Agenda.
We'll
oh,
get to it
today.
Tomorrow or today or tomorrow.
And then there's another question that has bothered me for a long time, and I think we'd need to have a professional answer to it, and that is that it's a common saying that there are two sets of standards, one for teachers and one for everybody else. And I think that this has a great bearing upon our constant problems in this regard. Now, maybe it isn't so. Maybe this is an overgeneralization. But it does seem to me to need some professional thought or utterance as to whether or not this is true or whether or not this is the way it should be. I don't know the answer to it, but I think along with some of you on the board, you've been wondering about it for a long time, and if it is one way or the other, then we would have a better idea of what we're doing these things.
So Chairman, I think it's true, like the same as it is for preachers, and I think if you're not willing to live up to it, you ought not to become a teacher or a preacher, either one. I think it's exactly the way it is, and I don't think you can change it.
Well, of course, us union officials feel the same way with you preachers.
Well, us people who serve on boards of education are becoming a little leery of assault with a deadly weapon. I have a letter in front of me that says, I forgot to mention this under communications, fellow board members. It says, I doubt very much whether you are convincing yourself. Did you ever try holding your nasty mouth? Save it for your wife. She has to take it. We don't, and from here on I'm going to watch your conduct carefully. I may even send away for a 1278 rifle. Would you like that? It looks that way. And then she's got enclosed a clipping of rifles with telescopic sights. She's clipped out of some Sears Roebuck catalog, and I think deadly weapons, I don't like to change that policy right now.
Well, we'll wait for the case to come before us.
I want to ask, Mr. Chairman, is that the right procedure? You know more than I would, Bill. Wait till a specific case comes before we change your policy?
Well, let's see what it is. It's a good way to decide on policy is to take a specific case.
Yeah, but if there's any possibility of these cases like this coming up, shouldn't we have our policy changed before a specific one does?
I think Larry Carney's got some additional information on that.
Well, only this, that I thought that under the, one of the recommendations under the new procedure was that if the Committee of Credentials had doubt as to the board's policy in a certain area, it would endeavor to present a hypothetical case and perhaps receive guidance, rather than bring the case to the board through the hearing process. That was why this document was presented to you.
This is hypothetical.
Well, I see. In other words, Larry, maybe this is the appropriate time to consider the policy, because if we change the policy on number two, at least, I don't think we ought to get into number one today until we get some more advice, but on number two, if we were to change the policy, then the Credentials Committee
might grant
the application, and the fellow would be saved the trouble, time, and expense of the hearing process.
We've had appeals from the employing school district, and hoping that more rapid consideration might be given one way or the other.
Well, I wouldn't object to considering the policy on number two today, Mr. Chairman. I really think it's pretty easy.
I would agree with that thoroughly.
It simply gives a little more leeway to the curriculum, or to the Credentials Committee.
In fact, I will so move that we revise our policy in this regard to give discretion to the Credentials Committee.
I second that.
In these matters.
You want to revise the policy you're moving to, huh?
That's right.
Yeah.
Just remove this
to say that anybody who assaults with a deadly weapon can later receive a credential if he's rehabilitated.
No, that's not what you say. You just don't have a policy statement on the subject at all.
We leave it to the committee.
You leave it entirely up to the
committee. Leave it up to the judgment of the committee and the board in a specific instance, huh?
That's
all right.
I'm not sure, Tom, that assault with a deadly weapon on a board member would come under the same classification as the others anyway.
Well, you can see, Mr. Commons, you're reading my mind. I wonder why that policy was adopted, but maybe that's not pertinent.
It was a somewhat unusual situation. It received a lot of publicity, and there was a lot of discussion. I remember it very well.
The old saying in the law that hard cases make bad law.
Mm-hmm. All right, we have a motion and a second. That we, what would the motion be? That we revoke this policy in order to deal with a specific case on its merits. Is that the way to put the resolution?
Is it a policy or a restriction?
It was a motion passed on February 11, 1961, that the commission be instructed to automatically deny applications in cases like this. What you would be doing would be simply moving to strike that motion from the record and to rescind it.
Dr. Rafferty, don't
That's
you feel that this is better procedure?
Yes, I do indeed.
Not to have this kind of a restriction?
I do indeed.
Particularly when we're limiting it to one type of crime.
I don't.
Apparently, something happened, and I honestly don't remember. I honestly can't remember the passage of this resolution.
I have no knowledge of it, but as far as the future is concerned, I think you're.
I'm certain that it must have been directed at some particularly outrageous case, but the trouble is, as Bill pointed out a minute ago, that we undoubtedly, in haste, passed a resolution.
If I was,
to take care of that situation, not realizing that we would make it difficult for everyone else in the future.
Right. Question?
All right, question. Question. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? No.
You vote no?
I vote no. It's passed.
Mr. President, may I ask whether it would be your wish to expand the policy to include other specific crimes then that would involve mandatory revocation?
No, Bill. I'm sorry if I don't, not maybe altogether logical about this. This seems to me a rather bad time to fool around with the policies on assaults with deadly weapons.
Well, I think it's the time because there's a young man down here who wants a credential. And if we think the policy is unjust, then we should repeal it. Because what we may be, if by not repealing it, what we may be doing is putting him to a lot of expense and time and trouble. And then when he gets before us, we'll say, all right, you may have your credential. Now, if it's the opinion of the Credentials Committee that the man should have his credential, then I'm for it.
Well, I think you make your case very well. All right, for the benefit of unanimity, I will withdraw my, Mrs. Keister, I will withdraw my doubts. The motion is passed at any event, in any event. Well, we got another, let's go on for another, you do have plenty of time.
Lots of time.
All right, Dr. Rafferty points out that we do have plenty of time tomorrow because we can't take up school unification until 1:30, can we, Ron? Cannot possibly. In that event, is there anything that anybody else would like to bring up now?
You got, Mr. Chairman, it's said that there's several little items that could be cleaned up real quick.
We can clean up.
Well, we can, all right, but I'm just pointing out to you that we have to wait till 1:30 tomorrow.
We really have lots of time.
Because school unification is scheduled for 1:30 and it can't be pushed up.
Otherwise, if you clean them up tonight, what are you going to do tomorrow morning?
That's the whole point.
We might think of something. You know, I mean, it would be nice just once. It would be nice just not to be under pressure for, an hour.
All right, just a minute, I didn't hear what Peggy said.
I'd like to have Ben make a report on his trip to Atlantic City for the vocational education at some time.
Yes, that's something we ought to do, Ben, is have a report from you on your trip for the vocational education committee. Would you like to do that tomorrow or today?
I can do it tomorrow. My thought, subject to your determination, is that we got a few little items to get
all right.
Out of the way.
All right, that's the pleasure of the board. Let's go ahead.
Then tomorrow we won't have so much pressure.
All right, let's go ahead then.
Mr. Braden, I'd like to return to item 13 and clear my conscience. I just can't, in all good conscience, even in spite of the law, say that we, the board, should adopt a figure of $306.96 as tuition.
Ron's been worried.
Well, you said it was funny. Now you're treating it seriously.
Yes, and I'm going to suggest that the figures be changed to $306 even.
How about $307?
$306 even, and $10.20. That at least takes off the odd cents.
Dr. Cox does have some discretion, does he?
I'm passing the discretion to the board.
Well, you don't come out the same.
No, but 30 times $10.20 is $306, and that's close enough. It's on the per unit basis of $10.20, which times 30 units or 15 per semester is $306. And I think that makes a whole lot better sense than $306.96.
So moved.
Better sense.
All right.
We like well-rounded.
Let's correct the minutes then. Mr. Scott's moved that we correct the minutes Is there a second to his motion?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried.
Thank you.
You could take a mandatory revocation.
Where
that's number 15. Larry, can we take up those mandatory revocations now?
Yes.
If the board so chooses.
That's item 15, their resolution for the revocation of credentials as a result of convictions of certain offenses. The board is required to act under section 13205, 6, and 7 of the education.
So move.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Carried.
I don't think there's any controversy with 11 or 12, if the board is interested in cleaning them up. 11 is purely a routine matter, bringing back to you regulations which you adopted in October as an emergency. They had to be published and then brought back to you. If there's no objection from the audience, and if the board feels the same way, you merely can reaffirm these.
So move.
Let me ask first, if for the sake of the record, is there any objection from the audience to our adoption of emergency regulations mentioned by Mr. Carney?
Changes the word commission to read committee to conform with the new statute.
There are no objections from the audience to our changing the word commission to read committee, and I therefore entertain a motion.
So moved.
Mr. Collins.
Seconded by Dr. Collins. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried.
And item 12 merely transposes a few sections and corrects a couple of cross-references. I don't believe there's any controversy or cause for it.
Do we need a motion on that?
If you please.
So move.
We do. Moved by Bishop Kennedy, seconded by Dr. Collins. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Well, let's go ahead on these revocations then.
Oh, yes.
Peggy, did you say something?
No.
I'm sorry. I thought you had.
For a change.
I'm sorry. For a change, huh?
Well, you have item 16, which involves the credentials of Lester Maurice Green. In June, the board considered the proposed decision and called for the transcript. The transcript and written argument are before you. Time has been lost in endeavoring to see if Mr. Green wished to present any argument. He has not. The record will show that he had pleaded guilty to a section of the penal code relating to bad checks, and he has never appeared at any time before this.
I move the adoption of the proposed resolution.
You do? Bill?
Yes, I do.
All right, let's to get it on. Let's have a second.
Second.
Everybody seconding? It's been seconded. Would you mind giving me your argument on this, Mr. Norris? I find it a little difficult to take a credential away from a fellow for what might be, I'm not sure, as I read it, might be overdrawing his account by $11. It certainly happens to, it's happened to me, I hereby publicly confess.
Well, if you want to explain
like to
why
that.
I have no reluctance to move for the have the credential revoked, there was a finding by the hearing officer, as a matter of fact, that and indeed he was convicted, was he not?
Pleaded guilty.
He pleaded guilty to this charge.
647,
which is
476B.
Which is an admission on his part that he did something in violation of the law. Now, it may be that he could have, it might have been that this was an inadvertence on his part. We all do overdraw from time to time. But in light of the plea of guilty, and in light of his failure to come forth after being given every opportunity to try to explain his conduct, or even to confess his guilt and offer contrition and suggest that he, you know, is rehabilitated under special circumstances. Then I think that it's proper to revoke his credential. Because it seems to me we have a clear case where the man, I mean, the way it looks to me, therefore, is it's a case of a man who has deliberately violated the law, pleaded guilty to a criminal offense, and has offered no explanation of his conduct.
To me, the problem is whether or not he wants his credential or whether or not he wants the right to teach. And this is the part that disturbs me because somewhere's in here, it's somebody's handwriting, which says he indicates he doesn't particularly care. If he showed any interest, I think my thoughts on this thing could be a lot different. See, it says,
well, that I realize.
I don't wish a hearing or something. I am returning the credential to you. It's on, I don't know what page it is.
It's about halfway through, and it's on the printed notice of defense form.
Let's see. It says, "I do not wish a hearing. I am returning the credential to you. You have in your file somewhere a letter from the judge, Powell in Barstow. The charges were dropped against me and was taken out of the book. I never intended to fraud anybody. I imagine most everyone who writes checks has sometimes or other overdrawn their account. Thanks, Lester M. Green."
Well,
reference to dropping charges is to proceedings under 1203.4 of the Penal Code, which provides when a person lives out and fulfills the terms of probation, the plea may be changed.
Maybe he's figuring if the credential is worth $11 and no more, it doesn't mean that much to him. I mean, this is got a kind of a funny thought here that, you know, there is such a thing as human dignity. Money isn't everything, although it's a lot. And, you know, it's possible that a fellow could say, well, this is going too far. I don't mind taking the rest of the routine, and I'm a good teacher. But this is just too much, and if this is all there is in it, they can keep it. And there are such humans, and I admire people with that kind of gumption. Although I think I would admire him more if he was fighting, rather than playing the hurt act.
I think there were several attempts. There were several opportunities that he had that were presented to him
But again, I point out the matter of human dignity.
Before it got to that point, though.
No, the human dignity. We're kind of in a vacuum here as to knowing whether or not he wants to teach.
Well, he paid the check. All right, well, we have a motion.
I can't.
We have a motion to deny the credential. It's been seconded. Any more discussion? We have a little, I think I sense on the part of the board some difference of opinion here.
I want to comment that I can't disagree with Bill. There's a plea of guilty. All these things occurred. The only thing that disturbs me is, and
I don't want to minimize the effect of the undoubted fraudulent intent of what occurred here and the moral aspect of what is involved. But the involvement, it is true, undoubtedly involved other checks too. But the point is, the man was charged with $11 back in 1961. The record was expunged, I would assume, only upon some showing, at least to the court, that the man was now entitled to an expungement of the record according to the judge's letter, in July of 1962. Now we're almost a year and a half later, and while it's true the man hasn't made a move to protect himself, I'm just wondering, in my own heart, I find it a little difficult not to want to take his side as the underdog, in the sense that maybe he has a feeling that Ben Scott has mentioned here. He feels, well, it just isn't worth all the trouble I have to go through. I don't know. I'm a little bit reluctant about summarily taking this man's right to teach away.
Mr. Chairman, go ahead.
I liked his letter. I like that what Ben says is what the way I read his note.
Besides, his right,
that's the way you feel.
Mr. Chairman, I could easily be talked out of my position, but I don't know. It seems to me that the fella has an obligation. There's going to be a public hearing very close by, and all he has to do is to go down to the public hearing and say something to the hearing officer so the hearing officer can make a judgment about what this specific offense means as far as this fella's character and fitness to teach is concerned. And he didn't do that, and that troubles me.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the least we can expect of a man who has pleaded guilty to a specific crime if he wants to keep his grip. I don't know, maybe I'm wrong, and that's maybe not a very important thing. That's the way I look at it.
Well, all right, there's the motion. Any more discussion?
Do you think there's any chance that a fellow like this would be so upset by the idea of a hearing that he couldn't face it and would refuse to go, even though, from our point of view, it looks as if he should have gone? I can't imagine a fellow giving up his credential for $11. If all he has to do is to appear, if he understood it, and wasn't scared to death of it somehow, and thought it might open up and the whole thing come out again and cause him so much trouble that he took the lesser way.
There's a possibility, Bishop, that this is a man who has not exercised his teaching credential in some time. Do we know anything about this, Larry, as to whether he was actually teaching within a given period of years?
I really don't
know.
It's one of those Class D vocationals, of course.
It says something about the retired.
He's probably not utilizing his credential.
I don't think he's using it. In fact, he said he might like to teach in a year and a half, might like to teach the mentally retarded in a year and a half, which he probably couldn't do on his credential anyway.
No.
So it might sound as though he doesn't want to work on this particular credential.
I might say that electricians are noted for their pride. They are in demand, they draw good money, and I still think it's a matter of human dignity.
Was there a previous conviction in this man's case of passing checks?
No.
You know, I this didn't quite ring too true with me. Somebody would take my license to practice dentistry because I overdrew my account. I think I would be insulted if my license was so tenuous. I wouldn't know how to defend it. I had the same sort of feeling in this case, but I didn't feel quite safe in making a judgment on it.
Well, his age is 41, I guess.
Unfortunately, we have to decide it.
Nothing.
Yeah, I agree.
What happens if we don't get a large enough vote on this?
There's no revocation then.
He keeps his credential.
If there are less than six votes to revoke, he keeps it.
Mm-hmm. He was not teaching when
he isn't going to keep it because
it's a mild suggestion.
He's already sent it in. Somebody wants to do it.
Somebody says it's not worth $11.34 of the board's time.
You see what happened? The lights went out because you were zeroing in on an electrician. That shows you how much dignity these people have.
Well, I think the way the board is struggling with this $11.34 case is just evidence of how seriously we take our responsibilities in this whole line of cases. For those who like to criticize the results.
And how we consider human dignity, you might ask.
Yeah. Question?
All right, let's have a roll call vote. I think it's going that way. Mrs. Kiefer, we might as well start that way.
Mrs. Bates, let's see, who am I voting?
For revocation. The motion is to revoke.
Is to revoke.
Is to revoke, that is the motion.
And that's the recommendation of the
hearing officer.
And presumably of the credentials committee. No, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's the recommendation of the credentials committee. Or does it?
I didn't hear you.
I almost slipped into an error. It doesn't necessarily mean that this is the recommendation of the credentials committee. committed. It may mean that they didn't know what to do with it either and sent it on for hearing.
You don't remember.
Well, all we know is it's a recommendation of the hearing officer.
That's all we know, yes, this file.
All right. We are in the middle of a roll call.
Aye.
Are we at the beginning? Mrs. Bates?
Aye.
Mr. Braden?
Aye.
Dr. Collins?
Nay.
Mr. Collins?
No.
Mr. Dava?
No.
Bishop Kennedy?
No.
Mr. Norris?
Aye.
Mr. Scott?
No. All right, the credential is not revoked. This gentleman will be surprised.
Particularly if he ever finds out.
I really, to clean up the case, there ought to be, I suppose there ought to be some decision of the board in this, and I presume that the decision of the board is that there were mitigating circumstances or rehabilitation. I don't think you can dispute the fact that he did get in this difficulty because he's admitted it and there's no denial.
Yeah, I don't know how we can make any.
Yeah, I know, but it leaves it up to the air without a decision.
For what purpose do you want this explanation?
Close the case.
Well, I suppose it ought to be given by one of those who voted no. Could we have Mr. Dabba is probably capable of making a statement?
Well, the statement I would make and the reason I voted no is, as I pointed out, I feel that the man, in effect, was found to have been rehabilitated by the court, or he would not have been had the record expunged and the matter cleared. And I would, in my own mind, because of the nature of the matter, would feel that the man is rehabilitated.
Right.
We have found rehabilitation on less facts than this at times in the past.
So I do point out, Mr. Dava, that the Education Code has a specific section that says that expungement proceedings under 1203.4 are of no effect, but that doesn't prevent you from similarly finding.
I am not a criminal lawyer. Exactly what does it mean to have under that section expungement?
Well, after 1203.4 provides that after a person has been released from probation or served the terms of it, the court on its own motion or on the motion of the defendant may allow the withdrawal of a plea of guilty and enter a plea of not guilty, or may withdraw a finding of guilt and enter a finding of not guilty. But our statute tends to negate the effect of it.
So he first enters a plea of guilty,
yes.
And the court says, well, I won't put you in jail, your record's pretty good,
yeah.
But I'll put you on probation for... I don't know.
Well, in this instance, the court said, would you pay the check? And he went and did it. He paid it up.
Yeah.
So that was the reason.
How long had he had that account, Mr. Kearney? Do you know?
No, I don't.
How much money was he?
I don't have that information. I'm sorry.
Well, the matter's been decided, and if you'll accept Mr. Dabba's explanation and his the reason for the negative vote, I guess that closes it. And. That's that. All right.
Well, I can think of another aspect of this thing is that his wife might have overdrawn the account. He was so disgusted and mad that he just didn't want to pay it. You know, this has happened too. It's possible.
Yeah. I like that better than Mr. Douglas.
Yeah, that's probably what happened.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Mr. Collins.
I move we adjourn.
Well, we can't adjourn, but we'll recess until tomorrow morning.
Mr. Chairman, what happened to the case, the credential case was on the agenda last time that we didn't get to?
Next case.
It's the next one.
Oh, we're not going to take that up tonight?
No, we really must go.
There are two of them, Mr. This was one, the green was one, right? And there's another.
That's the tough one.
Yeah, well, that gives you...